Where's the next episode coming from then, Tony?
Well, now, that's going to make the hair and the backs of people's necks stand up, if anything ever does, because we're having a special edition in Cairn Courthouse. And it'll probably be the last ever court case to be heard in the courthouse. But what we're going to be doing is we're going to put on trial the superstitions, the beliefs, the cures, and the pisogues that exist in Ireland, where they're in front of a judge, and the audience being the jury, two barristers, and there will be five expert witnesses, and then we will let the people decide whether pisogues and all that type of thing are just a waste of time in this modern world, or whether they really mean something. And I think people will be in for a shock.
For a specially convened sitting of the Twilight Court to examine a matter that is as old as time itself, our ancient belief in superstitions, customs, and folklore. You, as both audience and jury, are asked to consider if we, the so-called rational and well-balanced creatures, should dismiss superstition as bunkum, or should we give it the same credence and respect that our ancestors once did? Friday the 13th is generally regarded as a day to be extra vigilant, lest perhaps we should incur some bad luck or misfortune. On this Friday the 13th, we ask you to suspend all apprehensions and prejudices and to listen to this evening's evidence with an open mind. We will hear from counsel for superstition, Dr. Felix Rabbitfoot, and his expert witnesses on these matters. Opposing this evidence, we shall have counsel for common sense, Sir Percy Smythe Doubtfellow, who claims that superstition is nothing more than a load of nonsense and hogwash. Unlike courts in the temporal world, we will tolerate laughter and heckling and feedback. I should impress upon you that you can give decision as jury either by your actions or by a simple show of hands after all the evidence has been heard. Does everyone in this room understand and agree to such terms? Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Good. Now we shall commence proceedings. Dr. Rabbitfoot, would you care to make the opening remarks for superstition?
It would be my honour. Your honour. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you ever walked into a room and without hearing a single word being uttered or seen anyone's face, sensed that an argument is in progress? Have you ever had a gut instinct or feeling that when followed has served you well? Have you ever tried an ancient charm that for no good scientific reason has worked and cured you? Not everything in life has a straightforward answer. Man is the only animal on this planet arrogant enough to believe that he knows it all. But we don't. This universe and its ways are infinitely bigger than all of us. And things that we do not understand or cannot understand should, at the very least, be shown respect. My expert witnesses tonight will be relying upon sworn affidavits given to me earlier this month. They include a shaman, a shanike, a man with a cure, a matchmaker, and an undertaker. Fact, ladies and gentlemen, is so very often stranger than truth. Thank you for your attention.
Correction! Fact isn't capably stranger than fiction, but bringing God to life is inherently, inescapably, inevitably, and inordinately dumb. We eat, we sleep, we work, we argue, we get sick, and so on. As an escape valve, we have many forms of entertainment, be it the PlayStation, watching the Late Late Show, or The Simpsons, or reading a good Cecilia Hearn book.
Objection! No such thing exists!
Sustained.
All right. A Cecilia Hearn book, then. All of these fall into the much-needed category of entertainment, namely fiction. And so I shall prove this evening that what the superstitions, customs, and folklore of this proud nation also amount to is nothing more than just that, fiction. Curious crumbs of comfort that were invented and added to over time by some unfortunate coincidences. So, for example, a boat goes down in a storm, and in looking back at the sorry incident, a gibbering witness recalls that a man, probably red-headed, was whisking on board. The word spreads that such activity is bad luck, and hey, presto, it has become established fact. Your Honour, it might be beneficial for the record to say exactly what the dictionary defines as superstition.
Yes. Provided counsel has no objection. Superstition. An unreasonable or excessive belief in fear or magic, especially foreign or fantastical ideas not based on reason or knowledge. It is commonly applied to beliefs and practices surrounding luck, prophecy, and spiritual beings, particularly the irrational belief that future events can be influenced or foretold by specific unrelated behaviours or occurrences.
So then, members of the jury, are you in the raggle-taggle gypsy wagon of irrational beliefs and hocus-pocus, or are you living in the 21st century? I'm sorry to be a party pooper, but superstitions are nothing more than comfort blankets of reassurance for grown-ups. We get over the news about Father Christmas. We survive finding out the true identity of the Tooth Fairy. And I know with your support tonight, we might at long last face up to the truth about superstitions.
We shall commence with possibly the most nebulous of superstitions, that of omens, which to an observer from another planet would be as difficult to explain as the concept of left is in words alone. Without prejudice, Twilight Court rules allow a show of hands, as to who believes that they have already experienced a gnomon, be it in a dream or an occurrence or even in a thought. Please raise your hands now. Interesting. Very interesting indeed. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Rabbitfoot, please call your first witness.
I call upon Mr. Damien O'Malley.
Do you swear to tell the truth? The whole truth and nothing but the truth?
Sure, why wouldn't I?
Mr. O'Malley, what is your area of expertise for this court tonight?
Please, call me Damien. I'm the man to ask about omens, according to all my neighbours and family friends.
And can you tell us what exactly is an omen?
It's a sign of how events are going to work out.
And these can be either good or bad, yes?
Yes. So, for example, my good friend the magpie is best enjoyed when seen with another magpie. Or indeed it's good luck to meet a white lamb in the early morning with the sunlight on his face.
And an example of a bad omen might be?
Oh, there are many. A bird or a bat coming into the house is never good. And watch out for a picture falling off the wall for no good reason. A death in that family will surely follow.
Oh, I see. And would you regard Friday the 13th as being a particular day for watching out for either good or bad omens?
Friday the 13th gets a bad press for no good reason. From what I can see, it only came about in the last 100 years from two previously separate bad omens that have been of Friday and the number 13.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, from a 1907 book written by Thomas Lawson called Friday the 13th, where he tells us about the dealings of unscrupulous Wall Street traders. How times have changed. And tell us, how did you become authority in all of this?
Well, they'd be your words. I was just a good pair of ears from growing up, and I paid heed to what my elders had to say.
And what advice would you give the jury here tonight?
Well, the universe frequently gives us signs, but ultimately we make our own good luck. If you want something bad enough and truly believe it's possible, you'll get it. Conversely, if you think on too much on something that you don't want, you'll probably get that too. Wisdom is known as the law of attraction.
Thank you. No more questions, Your Honour.
Nothing more than New Age wishful thinking, Your Honour. Moving on, tell us a bit about crossing the path of a black cat.
Well, in these parts, it's deemed to be a sign of good luck.
And elsewhere, here.
Well, I'm no expert in Europe and what have you, but it's different there, I think.
Exactly. Only the countries that drive on the left believe in it. On the continent, it's bad luck to cross the path of a black cat. For example, in Ireland or the UK, a black cat is lucky. But in France and Germany or Italy, it's unlucky. Does that make much sense?
Not much, I guess, but I'm not going to lose sleep on the point.
I'm pleased to hear it. Tell me, what should a fisherman do if he meets a red-haired woman on the way to his boat?
Go home at once.
Or if a man asks you on your way to work, what are you going, where are you going, what should you do?
I'd say go home. Both are regarded as very unlucky.
Well, maybe for the fellow's employer. Isn't this just a myth put about by dossers like these here to get a day off work?
The sea has got her own ways of letting us know her mysteries, and you need to respect that.
So, never bring anything blue onto a boat.
No, you're looking for trouble if you do.
Or heaven forbid have a woman on board.
Not a good idea on any day of the week.
Or to say the word pig or to eat walnuts on board.
definitely never good.
Yeah, hogwash and nuts, I say. Thank you, Mr. Meenan. No further questions.
Young men are plenty, but sweethearts few. If my lovely queen, what shall I do? To the queen of hearts, he's the ace of sorrow. He's here today, and he's gone tomorrow. Young men are plenty, but sweethearts few. If my love leave me, what shall I do? Had I the store on yonder mountain, where gold and silver is there for counting, I would not count for the thought of thee. Mine eyes so full, I could not see. To the queen of hearts, he's the ace of sorrow. He's here today, and he's gone tomorrow. Young men are plenty, but sweethearts few. If my love leave me, what shall I do?
Our next area of concern is the topic of love and marriage. Now, many words have been spoken about this topic, both in song or in poetry. And indeed, many believe that luck plays a great part in bringing our soulmates to us. Customs and superstitions on this most critical of human endeavours have sprung up over time. But does something as intangible as love work best when these superstitions are rigorously followed? You, the jury, must decide.
Thank you, Your Honour. My next witness is Madame Lightfeather.
Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do. I do! My favourite offerings.
Madame Lightfeather, what is you here tonight as an expert witness?
Well, I'm known far and wide as a matchmaker. And I can tell a woman how to improve her chances of getting a man.
So, you can improve the chances of someone finding love if they follow a sort of crafted steps.
Yes, yes. Well, may I say that any woman who wants to get hitched should go out there and start looking for love. You know, the hungry eye sees far. But failing that, then there are ways and means that you can help a girl with.
And that's not a bad thing, surely. But can you tell the court what the tradition is for your husband, finding your husband?
Divination!
Divination!
Divination! Divination is the name given to the supernatural practice of finding out the name of the person you were supposed to be with, that you were destined for. Do you know?
And can you give us an example of this in practice?
Well, for ladies in bygone days, one of the original ways of predicting Mr. Right was to eat an apple on Halloween night while standing in front of the mirror. And then, all going well, she'd see his shadowy reflection looking back at her. Oh! And another curious custom that I heard tell of was for the women to get up, the women who were looking for husbands, to get up at dawn on May morning, right? And to go out and gather snails. Snails. And then they would put the snails into a dish of flour, and they'd watch them trailing through the flour, writing out the name of the husband-to-be.
Oh, please carry on, madame. This is most intriguing.
Well, assuming then that this worked and the suitor was identified, well, the best way of sealing the deal, as it were, it was to make up a potion from the ground liver of a black cat.
Oh, the Lord save us. That was such a powerful aphrodisiac.
They tell me that it'd have the man promising the woman anything and everything, including marriage.
That's certainly a novel approach.
Oh, it's also worth noting that just the right amount of ground hemlock will do the job just as well.
Some might say a few pints could do it just as well.
Now, do you know, if the woman isn't that sure of who to give the hemlock to, what she should do is this. Get a ball of wool and throw it into a lime kiln while holding on to the other end. And then she should wind up the wool until it's taut. And when it's taut, she should say, "Who is holding the wool?" And a disembodied will answer her back with the name of the man she was destined for.
Very handy indeed. But tell us, what if the man in question wasn't too happy about it? Is there any way he could break the spell?
Oh, well, the good news for any man worried about unwanted stalkers is that all he has to do is take a lock of the pursuer's hair, burn it, and then eat the ashes scattered over his food and drink, and that cools the woman's ardor like nothing else.
Would you agree, Bob, that love is not an exact science?
Tis the world's trickiest formula.
So, any help with this tricky subject, no matter how bizarre, can do no harm?
Any help at all, whatever works, that's what I say. It's far too important a subject to be left to fate.
Thank you. No further questions.
Madam Featherlight, my feather. Isn't it true that in days of yore, people who remained single were, in fact, ridiculed for not marrying?
Well, in the good old days, the courting season went from the last Sunday in July, which was called Whortle Sunday, or Frothen Sunday, or Garland Sunday, or Bilberry Sunday. Take your pick. And it went through until the following Lent, right? Now, on Shrove Tuesday, the stubborn singletons would be targeted, and pranks would be played on them, such as the de-wheeling of carts and the blocking of chimneys, just to let them know that they, you know, that they should pick it up a gear on the courting front before the courting season.
Well, love certainly is a battlefield. Wasn't it an even worse custom down in Waterford years ago for the poor singleton?
Oh, and I've heard it said that on Ash Wednesday, the poor unmarrieds were tied to a big log of wood and they were dragged down the quay while being abused and heckled and bit up. And graffiti of a rude nature was scrawled on their doors.
Charming. And any advice for the lucky ones who are about to get married?
Oh, now, the bride and groom, the new bride and groom, always should go to bed at the same time for their rest. Because if the woman, the bride, went on her own, she might be stolen away by the fairies. But on the other hand, a new bride has power over the fairies. Unless she has the misfortune to lift both of her feet up off the ground at the one time in the dance.
Is that really so, Madam Lightfeather? Isn't there a wedding custom about butter that the gents here tonight should know?
Oh, yes, indeed. I did hear of a custom whereby the new groom presented his bride with a big knob of golden butter beside a mere or a stream or a hill, while saying to her, O woman loved by me, mayst thou give me thy mind and thy body and thy soul.
How could any girl indeed resist a fine knob of water? No further questions.
As I went out one morning, it'd been in the month of May, a farmer and his daughter, sure, I spied upon me way. The girl sat down quite calmly to the milking of her cow, singing, I will and I must get married, for the humour is on me now. Well, if you're going to get married, come tell me who's the man. Quickly she did answer, he's William James McCann, a carpenter, a tailor, and a man to follow the plough, singing, I will and I must get married, for the humour is on me now. Well, if you're going to get married, come tell me what you'll do. Quickly she did answer, I'll do the same as you. I'll be mistress of my dairy, me buttermilk and me cow, singing I will and I must get married, for the humour is on me now. Well, soon these two got married, living and well to do. Soon she forgot her dairy, her buttermilk and her cow. Soon she forgot her dairy, her buttermilk and her cow, saying, I wish I'd never got married, for the humour is off me now.